Okay, Chevra, so we are in middle of a sugya that basically began on Chaf Gimel Amud Aleph and meanders and meanders and meanders on. On Chaf Gimel Amud Aleph, we learned the shita of Rabbi Meir that a sukkah wall cannot be made from an animal. You can't make a sukkah wall from an animal. And the Gemara has a few possibilities why you can't make a sukkah wall from an animal. One possibility is that the animal might run away. Another possibility is that the animal might die. That's what the Gemara says. So then the Gemara says, one second, you're telling me that Rabbi Meir is nervous that the animal might die, but we had a contradiction in sources about whether, we have a contradiction in sources about whether a wife of a Kohen can eat truma. On the one hand, we have a source that when the husband goes away to a distant land, the wife's allowed to eat truma. That means we're not concerned that maybe he died. On the other hand, I have another source that says a husband gives his wife a get and says that the get should take effect a moment before he dies. In that case, she's not allowed to eat truma because he might die. So, are we nervous about death? Are we not nervous about death? That's our contradiction. So the Gemara gives an answer. I have an answer, Rabbi Meir versus Rabbi Yehuda. Meaning, at first, the Gemara thinks that Rabbi Meir is the one who says that we are not nervous about death. And the reason why we think Rabbi Meir is the one who says we're not nervous about death is because Rabbi Meir, right, is because Rabbi Meir allows us to pull this trick about when a person buys wine and doesn't have a time to take truma off, etc. So Rabbi Meir says that you're allowed to drink the wine. In other words, you allow the truma to take effect afterwards. Rabbi Meir is not nervous about death. That's what the Gemara says. Yet Rabbi Meir says he is nervous about death. So we have a contradiction. So the Gemara says, well, we'll flip Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. And ostensibly, the Gemara in Chaf Daled Amud Aleph towards the top, the Gemara says that Rabbi Meir is not nervous about death. One second, I said it backwards. The Gemara in the top of Chaf Daled Amud Aleph says that Rabbi Meir is choshesh for death. Nonetheless, Rabbi Meir is not nervous that the barrel is going to split open because you can always appoint someone to guard your barrel. That's what the Gemara says on Chaf Daled Amud Aleph. Okay, so let's just bring it back home. What the Gemara says is that Rabbi Meir is Choshesh L'misa. Rabbi Yehuda is not Choshesh L'misa. But that's what the Gemara says. The case of the barrel splitting open, according to Rabbi Meir, that case, even though Rabbi Meir is Choshesh for Misa, in that case, he's not nervous. Because you can make sure the barrel won't split open. You'll designate somebody as the official barrel watch person, and that barrel watch person will make sure that the barrel will not split open. Rabbi Yehuda, who in Maseches Sukkah says you can use an animal as the wall of the sukkah, meaning Rabbi Yehuda is not nervous about Misa. Nonetheless, Rabbi Yehuda does not allow us to do this trick of taking the truma off based on the future, whatever is going to remain at the end. And the reason for that, the Gemara says, is not because Rabbi Yehuda is worried about Misa. We know Rabbi Yehuda is not worried about Misa, but rather it's because of this new concept called Breira. And I think last time we began to take a deep breath and try to explain somewhat what the idea of Breira is. It's not easy to explain. Tosfos over here has very long conversations about who holds a breira when, etc. But the simplest understanding of breira is, can you allow a chalos on something that is as of yet undefined? The definition will happen later on. In this case, I want to drink my wine. Now, in order to drink wine, I need Trumas and Maestros to be separated from it. Well, here's the problem. I'm not going to know what the Shumas and Maestris are until Acharei Kichlos HaKol, until all is said and done later on. If I hold of Ein Breira, what that means is I cannot allow a Chalos to take place based on what will happen later on. So the Truma can't take effect now because it's taking effect based on, you can't allow the contingency to work retroactively. That's the way, those were the terms that we used last time. Since I don't know what will remain at the end, so what Rabbi Yehuda holds is that fundamentally Rabbi Yehuda is not nervous about death, but nonetheless, by the case of Truma, Rabbi Yehuda says it does not work because of Breira. Rabbi Meir fundamentally is nervous about death. And according to Rabbi Meir, it does work by the case of Truma, because by the barrel, you don't have to be nervous about death. You can make sure the barrel won't die. That's effectively what the Gemara said. We're good, everyone? We're trying to be. Okay. So let's pick up, I'd say, from... it's the ninth line from the top of Chaftal Ramad Aleph. There's going to be a lot of Gemara that we'll try to do, and we'll make a few comments as we go on, but let's get into it. V'lo chayesh of Yehuda lebekiyas hanud. Actually, we read this last time. Right? The Gemara says, what do you mean? I guess we'll paraphrase it, because we read this last time. The Gemara says, you're telling me that Rabbi Yehuda is not nervous about the barrel splitting? You're telling me that Rabbi Yehuda's only concern is for Breira. He's not nervous about the barrel, but we see that there's a conversation going back and forth about the barrel splitting. So the Gemara answers, you know what? That conversation going back and forth is ulatame. According to you, et cetera, that you're nervous, according to you, Rabbi Meir, that you hold, that you are... Rabbi Yehuda says, Rabbi Meir, I don't hold the Breira, but you hold of Breira. But if you hold the Breira, shouldn't you be nervous that the jug is going to break open? So Rabbi Meir will say, no, I'm not. Right? So the back and forth over here is really, there is a conversation about whether I'm nervous about the barrel breaking open. But effectively, when all is said and done, Rabbi Yehuda is not worried that the barrel is going to break open. Rabbi Meir is not worried that the barrel is going to break open. This conversation about, aren't you worried the barrel will break open? That conversation is sort of in the hypothetical. Okay, now we can go on in the Gemara. We good, Chevra? Zak the Gemara, v'lo chayesh Rabbi Yehuda lamisa. Right, this is it's 16 lines from the bottom. V'lo chayish Rabbi Yehuda lamisa, what Rabbi Yehuda is not nervous about death, right? That's what we said. That Rabbi Yehuda allows the animal to be the wall of a sukkah. And he's not choshesh that there's going to be death. But v'hatnan, but we learned, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, af isha acheres maskinen lo, shema tomas ishto. Right, the first Mishnah in Yuma says that Rabbi Yehuda tells us that the Kohen Gadol has to have a backup wife. It sounds like a really bad reality TV show. Right, the Kohen Gadol has to have a backup wife, because maybe his wife will die. And the Torah says, V'chiper ba'ado uva'ad beso beso zu ishto. The Kohen Gadol has to be married to serve as Kohen Gadol. So because of the concern that the wife will die, Rabbi Yehuda says you need a backup wife. So that seems to indicate Rabbi Yehuda is choshesh lamisa. So the Gemara says, no, that doesn't prove anything. Ha'itmar Allah, Amar Rav Huna, Breid Rabbi Yehoshua, Mala Asu, the kapara. The Gemara says it's a ma'ala by kapara. In other words, for the kapara of Yom HaKippurim, we have an additional concern that we don't hold of ordinarily. Rabbi Yehuda ordinarily is not worried about Misa. But when it comes to the kapara of Yom HaKippurim, it's such a big deal, so there Rabbi Yehuda is choshesh l'misa. Let's just pause over here for a second, and let's just take some inventory. So halacha l'maisa, if I'd ask you, am I choshesh for Misa, or am I not choshesh l'misa? What would you say? Halacha l'maisa. So let's take the sources that we have. As a matter of halacha, do we have a backup wife for the Kohen Gadol? We do not. Right? Rabbi Yehuda says you do. But the Chachomim disagree with Rabbi Yehuda. If you'll notice, there is no Ein Mishpat letter on Rabbi Yehuda's statement. Right? We do not paskin that you need a backup wife. Great. That seems to indicate that we are not Choshesh for Misa. We also paskin la halacha that I am allowed to use an animal as a wall of a sukkah, right? If you go back to Chaf Gimel Amud Aleph, right, when the Gemara began the conversation about using an animal as the wall of a sukkah, so there's a letter Gimel on top of the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. If you want to know how we paskin, you always look at the Ein Mishpat, no? The Ein Mishpat are these little letters that tell you where the source is in the halacha. So when we begin our Gemara, there's a machlokas, Remei and Rabbi Yehuda. Can a animal be the wall of a sukkah? Rabbi Yehuda says yes. That means we are not worried about death. Right? That works out well. That we're not worried about death. So far, so good? Well, the problem is that the case that we encountered, if you look at the letter Beis, on Chaf Gimel on the Beis, if a man gives his wife a get and says, I want this get to take effect the moment before I die, so she may not eat any truma. She may not eat truma. That means we are nervous about death. So now I got my problem. I have two statements that seem to indicate I'm not nervous about death. Right? I have the halacha by making the sukkah wall out of an animal. I'm not nervous about death. We do not have a backup wife for the Kohen Gadol on Yom HaKippurim. We're not nervous about death. But we do know, the Rambam tells me in Perek Tes of Trumos, Halacha Aleph, we do know that if a man gives his wife a get, that the get should take effect a moment before he dies, so she may not eat truma right away. That means I am nervous about death. So what exactly is this? How do we unpackage this one? Dr. Lang, good evening.
Hi, Rabbi Schwartz. How are you?
Thank God. I'm doing well.
Good to hear. Is it that we're concerned about death, or we're concerned about the woman eating truma, which is to say, like, if I sit in my sukkah that is made with a wall that has an elephant, like, and I eat, and I think that my sukkah is valid, that's not the best, it's not great.
But it's not the worst thing on the planet.
Right. Is that the same level as a woman eating truma when she shouldn't be?
That's an interesting point. In other words, what you're suggesting is that maybe I'm only nervous about death in the case of truma because it's such a serious aveira to eat truma. Again, I think we'd have to try to unpackage, to go through like a million gemaras and figure out how seriously we take that aveira of eating truma. I don't consider it such a serious thing. Dr. Tanner, did you have a comment? Am I the only one here who doesn't have a doctor, by the way? Yeah.
No, I was just going to say, I don't know if it's just the Truma, because the other Mishnah that talks about Truma also, with the Bat Yisrael Shana Nesed LaKohen, it looks like the Halacha is that she can eat Truma. But, so there's another case.
Right, so let's talk about this. So how can the Rambam Paskin both, in the case that the husband goes away to a distant land, so the Rambam Paskin is that the wife is allowed to eat Truma, but in the case of here is your get, and the get will take effect the moment before I die, then she may not eat Truma, right? I was trying to deceive you in the sense of I only quoted the second halacha. The Rambam Paskin is like both dinim. So the Achronim all have a comment where they say that Shema Meis lo Chayshinon, Shema Yamos Chayshinon. Meaning, we are not nervous that someone is dead. Everyone has a Cheskas Chayim. The Chazaka is, the status quo is that I'm alive. We're not nervous that I am dead now. We are nervous that I will die in the future. Right? There is a greater concern that something will happen in the future. Now, most of the cases that we're dealing with are cases of Shema Yamos, right? The concern of the backup wife. The concern of the backup wife that the Kohen Gadol has Yom Kippur. That's because his wife might die in the future. Right, in our Gemara, not using an animal as a sukkah wall is because it might die later on. We're never concerned. As a matter of halacha, the poskim say we're never concerned that death happened in the past. We are concerned possibly that death might happen in the future. But whether we are concerned that death will happen in the future or not seems to be a contradiction in the Rambam. And that's the basic point I'm trying to get to. The Rambam seems to contradict himself. As a matter of halacha, we do not need a backup wife. That means I'm not nervous that you will die. On the other hand, if I give a get, that should take effect the moment before I die. So in that case, you don't take truma. That means I am nervous that you will die. So this is already a problem. Dr. Tanner, yes.
Can I just clarify something? In that case, the moment before I die, does he mean that she's divorced right away then? As soon as he says that, is that what the implication of that she cannot eat truma?
No, she's not divorced until a moment before he dies. In other words, he's
about
now 23 years old. He's going to live till 99. She's going to spend the next 76 years while she is still married, technically, but she can't eat truma.
So it's
because
truma.
He might die a second from now. It's a very bad way to live life, that you're worried that you're going to die the next moment. But that's what's going on.
Pirkei Avos.
You're very frum. Okay, right, got it. That's today's Musar lesson. But the point is, we have a contradiction in the Rambams. So the Aruch Laner over here has a brief essay where he decides to answer this question based on a Magen Avraham in Hilchos Tainis. You know, if a person, let's say, has a bad dream on Shabbos, so the din is that you have to fast when you have the bad dream. That's called a Tainis Chalom. You're not supposed to fast on Shabbos, but you have a terrible dream. Misha Nafsho Aguma Olav. You're all upset by the dream. So the halacha is that what you do is you fast on Shabbos. But Sarach L'meisav Tainis L'Tainiso. But the Gemara in Tainis, I don't think it was that long ago in Daf Yomi, the Gemara says that you have to have a makeup fast. Since you did the Avera of fasting on Shabbos, so you end up having to make it up. So you basically get to pay kefil, right? You fast because you had the bad dream, and then you'll fast again at some later point. It says in Shulchan Aruch, you're allowed to hold off that fast until this time of the year. Let's say you have your bad dream in the middle of the summer, but I could hold my fast off until January, December, when it gets dark at 4:30, rather than fasting when it gets dark at 8:30 at night. Again, this is a fast day that is a morning to night fast, like our standard fasts. So the Magen Avraham is bothered by Akasha. How are you allowed to postpone fasting? Don't we have to worry that you're going to die? And you might die, and you won't fulfill your obligation to fast. So therefore, we should not allow you to make it up. Or we should say, you have to make it up tomorrow. How is it that you could delay until the winter? That's the Magen Avraham's kasha. So the Magen Avraham says something about, well, maybe we're nervous that you're going to die in the long term. We're not nervous you're going to die in the short term. But that doesn't really make sense because, right, this is what Nachman Eyre says, because one second, from August until January is, what, is that long term, is that short term? How do you find the terms? So the Aruch Lanier himself has the following suggestion. He says there is a difference between achshash for izman mugbal and for a zman that's not mugbal. Meaning, the issue is whether there is a defined time or not. If there is a defined time, so in the situation when there is a defined time, I am not nervous that you're going to die. But if the time is undefined, so then you have to be concerned the person will die. Meaning, if someone gives his wife a get, and he says, this get will take effect a moment before I die. Well, any moment could be the moment before you die, because you could die at any moment. You will die at some point. Therefore, we say, as a matter of halacha, you know what? That's an undefined time. Because it's a zman that's not mugbal, so therefore I am more nervous about death. Because it's an undefined amount of time. However, when it is a defined amount of time, so then I am not worried about death. The Kohen Gadol on Yom HaKippurim, right? Well, what's the concern? That one day, right? Achat Bashana, that one day a year. Oh, okay, that's a defined amount of time. If it's a defined amount of time, I'm not nervous that you're going to die. Similarly, Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger, who according to tradition gave smicha to Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch, but no one ever saw the smicha, Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger in the Aruch Lanier says, maybe that's the answer. Maybe the answer is that the fast day is a defined amount of time. What am I saying? I'm saying, you know what? I'm going to fast, but I'm going to fast in the winter. But I'm defining the time. That's okay. I'm not nervous I'm going to die before the winter because I have a rove, a strong rove that most people are not going to die before the winter. But when I have an undefined amount of time, if I say that the get will take effect the moment before I die, since that's undefined, so therefore there is more of a concern for Misa. That is the Aruch Lanier's answer, which I actually think has a certain elegance to it. I think it satisfies the problem in the sugya. Okay, questions or comments about this point? Okay, so let's go on in the Gemara. So the Gemara asks, Bein Laman de Omer Shema Tomos, Bein Laman de Omer Shema Tivrach. The Gemara says, on Chof Gimel Amar Aleph, we had two opinions within Rabbi Meir, whether we're nervous that the animal will die, whether we're nervous the animal is going to run away. But no matter what, Mida Oraisa, it's a good Mechitza. Rabbanan Hudigazruba. On the level of Daraisa, it's a fine Mechitza. One second. Tanya said, undefined doesn't work with rove.
I meant in a good way, because you were saying rove times people survive till winter. But
exactly.
If there's no like gvul, then you can't even think about rove.
Nachon, that's precisely the point that Narchlan is making, right? I think you understood it exactly correctly. Right? That's the idea, that because if there's a defined time, so then I can rely on rove. If it's an undefined amount of time, so that rove is meaningless because everyone will die, right? If you have a question whether everyone will die or not, it's a pasuk in Koheles. People will die. So we know Koheles is right, right? Adkan, up. So the Gemara asks, whether you hold of Shema Tomas, whether you hold of Shema Tivrach, but on the level of Dairais, it's a good mechitza. Midrabanan, they say it's not a good mechitza, or Rabbi Meir says it's not a good mechitza, because of one of those two reasons. So Elamayatu, Rabbi Meir, Titame Mishum Golo. Alamatnan, Rabbi Yehuda Mitame Mishum Golo, Rabbi Meir Mitaher. The Gemara says, if min ha-Torah, it's a good mechitza. So I could understand that the Chachamim have a chumrah that in certain cases we don't want you to use something that min ha-Torah is good. So I don't want you to use it as a mechitza for a sukkah. I don't want you to use it as a pase be'ra'os. I don't want you to use it as a lechi for a mavoi. Those are all chumras. But when it comes to a golo, in that case, Rabbi Meir is saying a kula. So this concern of maybe the animal is going to run away, maybe it's going to die, how does that enable a kula? That's the Gemara's question. If it works on the level of Da'iraisa, so how come it is not, I would say kosher as a golol, but does not have the halachic status of a golol? On the level of Dairaisa, it's fine. You want to tell me that midrabanan were machmir. But midrabanan machmir, that what? It doesn't have the din of golol? Minatar, it is a golol. How do you get rid of that din Dairaisa that it was a golol? Just, I'm trying to look at people's faces to figure out if people understand or if I have to think of some other way of explaining this. Rachel?
I just had a question about the D'oraisa. How did we know that this is only a question of D'rabanan?
Let's translate the words. Shema Tumas. Maybe it will die. That means the... probably the Chachamim, the Rabbanim, are worried maybe it will die. Right?
Okay,
it might run away. That means the Chachamim are worried it might run away. It sounds like on the level of the Reis, it's fine. But Midrabbanan, it's not good. So I understand why I could say that as a Chumrah. But how could it be that Rabbi Meir does not allow, or Rabbi Meir says an animal does not have the halachic status of Golol? If Min HaTorah has the halachic status of Golol, where did that status go? How did that status fall away?
But isn't Rabbi Meir... We kind of tried to figure this out, and one of the things we noticed is that, I mean, Rabbi Meir says an animal cannot be a Golol, but is that relevant to the fact that it's Tahor, or are those two different things?
So I'll say it like this. The fact that Rabbi Meir has a bunch of halachos and they're all placed together would seem to indicate that there's like one reason for all of them.
But it seems like three of them. Okay, so we also tried that approach. And it seems like three of them involves like mechitza or, you know, what did you call it? Halakhic silly putty mechitza. Like in three cases, there's somehow being a wall. And
right.
So then are we supposed to understand Golel to be a kind of wall?
So that is a $1 million question that I don't know the answer. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, I don't understand this whole Gemara. This whole Gemara seems to be predicated on a comparison between Golel and Halachos of Mechitza somehow. But like, why would Golel have anything to do with Mechitza? I don't know the answer to that. That's a very strong question on this entire Gemara.
So well, we were really stuck. I was really perseverating over this and kind of made everybody get stuck because I couldn't move on. We went back to the Rashi on Chaf Gimel Amud Aleph, And I know we did away with the kisui, like we talked about other alternatives to the kisui la'arano shalmes, but ein shem golel alav l'tame.
Right.
And so then I didn't even understand the elamiata.
The elamiata on chavdalad?
Yeah.
Well, the elamiata is that if the concern is that the animal might run away, let's say. So that concern that the animal might run away, I understand, I'll say it as a chumrah, that it does not allow this animal to serve as a wall for a sukkah. But how does that enable the kula of golal?
Sorry, the elamiata is that Rabbi Meir is titma mishum golal.
Right.
I don't understand why we would think Rabbi Meir thinks that the golal would be matame.
No, it should be tame. No, we know as a matter of halacha, we saw in Chaf Gamamar Aleph, that Rabbi Meir says it does not have the status of golal. But the Gemara is asking if the reasoning behind Rabbi Meir is that he is worried about Misa or something, meaning on the level of the Oraisa, it's a great thing. It's a great mechitza. Midrabanan, he says it's no good as a chumra, because maybe it's going to run away. Well, if it's a chumra, it should still be tame as golal. How does the fact that it's going to run away enable a kula that a kula that does not have the status of golo?
I feel like I'm still going to be stuck, so I don't want to ask you much more. You keep saying the same thing. I'm just not getting it.
Let's read the Rashi here in Chaf Daled. I think the Rashi will explain it better than I can. So you're shaking your head. You say, I tried that Rashi. I still don't get it. Okay, I hear that. We'll try it together. Right? Zak Rashi. Uparchinon. We have a question. Bein lamanda amar taimed Reb Meir mishum shema tivrach. Whether you hold that the concern of Rav Meir is because the animal is going to run away. Bein lamanda amar mishum shema tamos. Whether the concern is the animal will die. Tarvayu mefarashi l'Rav Meir. They're both explaining Rabbi Meir. Demid Orai said it's a good mechitza. Rabbanan gozor. The rabbi said shema tivrach o tamos. The rabbi said, oh, maybe it's going to run away. Maybe it's going to die. So tenach gabe sukkah. I understand by sukkah and mavui and beiraos. I understand by those cases, Rabbi Meir lo chumra, because of the concern that might run away. So Rabbi Meir has a chumra. He says it does not count. Avagabe golo, Rabbi Meir is meiko. Right? By the case of the golo, Rabbi Meir is meiko. Rabbi Meir says that the animal does not have the halachic status of golo. The cave under me the oraisa bottle, heich yachol letaharo midei tumas golol. Since on the level of the oraisa it is bottle, I think what Rashi means by bottle is that the golol becomes bottle to the mace. Since on the level of the oraisa it takes on the status of the mace, and it is tame on the level of the oraisa, how can you get rid of that tuma? Heich yachol letaharo midei tumas golol. How can you get rid of that tumah? And then Rashi goes on to say how that the Gemara is asking kasha from a Mishnah. Really, the question could have been asked from the Braisa that we had on Amud Aleph, but the Mishnah is more explicit. That's the way Rashi says it. Does this clarify anything? Or
understanding the word batel was really helpful. We looked at the Rambam, where he explained that idea of something being connected to the mace, but when it leaves the mace, then it's tahor again.
Okay.
I'm still stuck on the elamiata, but I don't want to like hijack if everybody else is cool, you know? So
does anyone want to try to help me and try to explain this to Tanya? Like sometimes if someone else like does it, sometimes I get caught in my own words and it's hard for me to explain.
The nakuda that stuck for me is if we know that Rabbi Meir is Matahir, why are we deducing elamiata that he's going to see it as matame. I understand that you're saying it's connected to the mace while it's there. But if it runs away, then it's not connected to the mace anymore.
But the point is, we're using the idea that it might run away as a chumrah. Because it might run away, therefore it does not count as a mechitza for a sukkah. Right? It's a chumrah. But how can I say that because it might run away, that creates a kula in the sense of it cannot serve as a golem? How do I allow the chshash, the concern that the animal is going to run away, how does that allow the dinda oraisa of golal not to take effect?
And the din of golal we're conflating with the notion of it contracts tuma.
Yes, golal means it contracts tuma as golal. That's correct. So the Gemara is asking, well, how does Rabbi, if you're telling me that the reason why, according to Rabbi Meir, an animal cannot be a wall for a sukkah is because it's going to run away, it's going to die, well, what does that have to do with golal? Ella Amar Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, right, like seven lines to the bottom. Kasav Rav Meir, Kol Mechitza Shomedes Beruach, Eina Mechitza. Any mechitza that requires wind to keep it standing, that's not a good mechitza. In other words, what the Gemara is saying is that Rabbi Meir's psul of an animal serving as the wall of a sukkah is not a chshash derabbanan, the animal might run away, but it's a fundamental din. He has some halacha. I don't know where he gets it from. But he has some halacha that to be a mechitza, it cannot be something that is supported by the wind. Something that's held up by the wind is not a good mechitza. An animal is held up by the wind. There's nishmas ruach chayim ba'apav. And therefore, it is not a good mechitza. And again, like the point that we made before, somehow we treat golal like it's a din of mechitza. That's a great mystery, but that's what it is. Ikka de Amri, a second possible reason. Again, what we're trying to suggest is that according to Rabbi Meir, the reason why an animal cannot be the wall of a sukkah is not because of some chshash, some gezeirah d'rabbanon, like it might run away, it might die, but no, it's fundamental. What's the fundamental principle? Principle one is that to be a mechitza, it cannot be something that's supported by the wind. Principle number two, Ikka de'amri Rav Acha bar Yaakov, Kasav HaRav Meir, Kol mechitza she'ena asuya bidei adam, eina mechitza. A mechitza has to be man-made. If it's not man-made, it is not a kosher mechitza. That's the halacha. We had an idea like this on Daf Chaf Amid Beis, right at the beginning of this perek, right? The Gemara spoke about if you have some stones and the bugs like made a hole in it. So that does not count as an ohel, according to one opinion. Because in order to be a mechitza, it has to be asui bidei adam. Right, it's the same type of idea that we had on Chaf on the base, right? As we have over here on Chaf Dalet. On Chaf on the base, the Gemara tells me how I know this, because the pasuk says that the word ohel, and the word ohel is derived from Mishkan, and Mishkan is man-made. So the second approach I understand a little bit better. The approach that in order to be a mechitza has to be man-made, I saw that idea at the beginning of the perek. The first approach in the Gemara, that to be a mechitza cannot be supported by the wind, that's a harder idea to source. But okay, be it as it may, There are two fundamental reasons. Rachel?
Sorry, just to clarify, these two fundamental reasons that we're looking at, are we back to looking at a deraita level or still a derabanan?
Deraita.
Okay.
We're saying that min ha-Torah, a animal is not a machitza according to Rabbi Meir. And the reason why is because it's supported by the wind or because it is not man-made. And min ha-Torah, the definition of a machitza, has to be man-made. It has to be not supported by the wind. My Beinayu, the Gemara says, what is the nafgamina between these two suggestions? So Ike Beinayu de Ukma Benod Tafuach. The case is I have like some balloon or something that is supporting the wall of the sukkah. Lamada machitza omedes beruach ena machitza hare omedes beruach. Lamada oma ena asuya bide adam hare asuya bide adam. Right? Let's say I have a, should I draw a picture? I haven't drawn the picture in like a while. Let's say I have a very beautiful sukkah wall that is supported, right, by a balloon that is holding the sukkah wall up, right? Is that a beautiful picture? I have a balloon that's holding the sukkah wall up. So if the reason why Rabbi Meir says it's no good is that there's this special halacha that a mechitza has to be self-supporting, not supported by the wind. So in this case, it's supported by the wind. However, if you hold, it has to be man-made. In this case, it is man-made. I blew the balloon. I put the wall there. It is man-made. That's what the Gemara says. Okay. So that's the Gemara. Ostensibly, when all the dust settles on the sugya, Rabbi Meir holds that an animal is not a good mechitza for a sukkah on a fundamental level, on the level of Doraisa, because it's supported by the wind, because it's not man-made. There's some halacha on the level of Doraisa that it is not a good mechitza. Okay, should we go on to the next piece of Gemara? Excellent. Okay, let's go on. Zakti Gemara. Amar. Mishra Biosi Aglili Amru Af in Kosin Olav Gite Nashim. You cannot write a get on an animal. You cannot take the hide of the animal and write a get on it, according to Biosi Aglili. My time at Biosi Aglili, the Gemara says. What's his reasoning? The Tanya. Right? The Pasuk writes in Parashas Ki Seitze, V'kasav lo sefer krisus v'nosan biyada. Right? That the husband writes a book of divorce. So sefer. Ein li ela, sefer. Minayin l'rabos kol davar. Right? The Torah says sefer. It would sound like only sefer is kosher. Sefer, Rashi comments, means klaf. It means parchment. So I would think the only thing that's kosher to write a get on is parchment. How do you know that you can write a get on anything? Talmud Lomar, the kasav la mikol makom. The kasav la means he writes anything for her. He writes it on anything. Any substance that written on is good. Im kain, ma talmud lomar, sefer. If the kasav means you can write the get on anything, so what does sefer teach you? Lo malocha, ma sefer davar shein bo ruach chayim ve'ino ochel, af kol davar shein bo ruach chayim ve'ino ochel. Rabbi Yossi Aglili tells me that the word sefer is kind of a template. It is teaching me that the only things I could write a get on is something that is similar to parchment, meaning it is not alive, and it is not food. Now, how exactly we get these ideas that Sefer teaches me not alive and not food? So Tosis over here is basically bothered. The little Tosis, Ma Sefer. So Tosis says, yeah, sometimes the Gemara uses the prat. Sometimes the Gemara uses the detail that the Pasuk says to teach me this halacha, sometimes teaches me that halacha, it's like a great mystery in Judaism. Right? How Rabbi Yossi Agluli knows that sefer means something that is not alive and not food. Not exactly sure, but that's what he does. So what we're saying is, according to Rabbi Yossi Agluli, you cannot write a get on an animal because a get has to be on something that is not alive and something that is not food. That means, by the way, that the animal, when it's alive, cannot be used for a get. Once the animal dies, so you can write a get, I guess, on the hide of the animal, because that's not food, but you can't write a get on the meat of the animal. Right? So this animal is not that usable as get writing material. What did the Rabbanan
do? Is it cloth made of animal skin, though?
No, but again, I think the animal skin is not food.
Yeah, no, I know. But like, wouldn't we run into a lot of problems if we couldn't use animal skin to write
things? Oh, yeah. That would, like, there'd be nothing you could use.
Right, like, very exciting.
You could use paper, papyrus, or something. I don't know.
Can I ask a quick question? Is there any significance to the fact that on this stuff we're using Ruach Chaim, and on the previous one it was just Ruach, to in Rabbi Meir's understanding of what you can use, like what a mechitza requires, that it can't be something that's just Ruach? It wasn't Ruach Chaim there.
Right, that's an interesting point.
It's one of the picky detailed word things that, you know.
I did. Thank you. I did not think about that. I mean, the way I explained the Gemara on the bottom of Amr Aleph about the wall that's supported by the balloon, so that's not about Ruach Chaim. It's not about life. That's just about wind. But yes, I did not pick up on the fact that the Gemara is changing from wind to life. Right? Okay.
Right, but Rabbi Meir said Ruach Chaim in his thing called Davar She'ein Bo Ruach Chaim.
Rabbi Meir said
Kol Davar She'esh Bo Ruach Chaim. So he used that same
phrase. Yeah, Rabbi Meir on Chof Yom Amraf uses the word Ruach Chaim. But then the Gemara on Chof Dalet, I think Zoe's point is, the Gemara explains Rabbi Meir based on anything that's Omedes Beruach, and it does not use the word Ruach Chaim. But then on Chafdalim and Beis, I get to get, I'm going back to Ruach Chaim, not to Ruach. I think that's the back and forth that we have over here. Oh. So again, so Rabbi Yossi Agluli says that you cannot write a get on an animal because sefer means something that is not alive. For Rabbanon, what did the Rabbanon do with sefer? So the Rabbanon explained, Iksiv ba-sefer kidka amrit. Had the Torah said, because of ba-sefer, so ba-sefer would mean the material that I write on. Hasha dechsiv sefer, lispiras devarim ba'alma hu da'asu. The word sefer means telling the story. You see, if I say a book could mean a physical structure called a book, right? That's what a book could mean. A book could also mean the story that's in the book. So what the Chachamim are saying is that had the Torah said, v'kasav ba-sefer, so the word sefer would mean the physical book. But now that it says sefer, so it means a story rather than a book. In other words, the get has to tell me the story that happens. The get has to say, I, so-and-so, the son of so-and-so, divorced my wife, so-and-so, the daughter of so-and-so, and this is given to you and you're free to marry anyone. That's the text of the get. It tells you the whole story. That sefer is Sfiras Devarim Huda Asa. It tells me that it has to be a story. So then the Gemara asks, "V'rabbanon Hai v'kosav maidarshi be'yi. What did they learn from v'kosav? Meaning, v'kosav, according to Rabbi Yossi Haglili, v'kosav means, and you write, which means authorship, story, and sefer means that it's the book. It is the physical substance. But according to the Chachamim, so the word sefer means it's a story. So what does the word v'kosav teach me? I already know that it's a story because sefer is a story. And stories get written. So why does the Torah say v'kosav lo sefer? Right? The Torah should just say, I guess, v'nosan lo sefer. He gives her a sefer, and sefer means that there's a story. And if there's a story, obviously it's written. So that's the Gemara's kasha. What do they do with the word v'kosav? Zot the Gemara hahu miboyelahu v'ksiva misgareshes v'eina misgareshes v'kesef. The word v'kosav tells me that divorce happens through something that is written. It does not happen through kesef. There are three ways you can get married. Kesef, shtar, and bia. Divorce can only be with ksiva. We do not say that the husband who gave her the ring to get married could also give a ring, right? Rashi learns that the husband could give her a ring potentially. The havamin is that the husband could give a ring and that should serve as divorce. B'ksiva miskareshes, ve'ina miskareshes b'kesef. I would have thought, says the Gemara, I would have thought that since we equate marriage to divorce, just like you get married with kesef, you get divorced with kesef, kamash malam. Now, if you would have asked me, I would have said that the notion of getting divorced with money, this notion in the alternative universe, this hava amina notion, I would have understood it to mean that the wife gives the husband his money back, right? He gives her a ring. The way divorce happens is she takes the ring off and says, you keep it, right? That's what I would have thought. Yet in our Gemara, it's clear, and Rashi makes it abundantly clear, that the hava amina, that divorce could happen through money, is that the husband gives the wife money as divorce. This seems to be proof that the kesef kedushin is not a, again, like we have to explain this like a million times, and to some extent, it's apologetics, but to some extent, I think it's 1,000,000% true. Kesef Kedushin is not purchase. When the husband marries his wife, he does not purchase her. Were it to be purchase, so then you return the money. Right? The idea is in the Lashon of the Sma in Choshen Mishpat Siman Kuf Tzadi, it's called Kesef Kinyan. It's not Kesef Shavius. It's not that kesef happens by giving value. Kedushe kesef happens through kinyan. It's like a magical act of acquisition. Just like there are other methods of acquisition in halacha. I do a kinyan sudder. I pick up a handkerchief and that shows that it's a kinyan. I do, right, there's 1,000 ways of acquiring something. There's a few ways of acquiring stuff in halacha. Kesef is not acquisition by means of transferring a value. If kesef would be acquisition by means of transferring value, so then you would explain when the Gemara says, oh, maybe you get divorced with kesef, that would mean that she gives the money back to him. That's not what this Gemara is saying, right? Rather, what the Gemara means is that the kesef is some sort of kinyan rather than shavius. It's not value. It is some halachic notion of kinyan. Again, there's like 1,000 proofs, by the way, that kiddushin is not purchase, right? The whole notion that like people like say, oh, you know, like halacha is so demeaning to women and like kiddushin means you purchase. Purchasing means I own a pen, I could sell it to you. No? Kesef kiddushin, you're buying it from, again, I'm not talking about kiddushin ketana. I'm not talking about that case. Maybe over there you have like some conceptual issue. But in a normal circumstance, the couple gets married. It's not like you're purchasing an item and you're transferring it from A to B. There was no prior owner. And if there's no prior owner, that gives me strong reason to believe that kiddushin doesn't mean that there's a present owner. It means that there's a new status that takes place. And the transferring of the money is a way to create that status. And if that's the case, the hava amina in the Gemara, that kesef can serve as gerushin, that kesef could serve as divorce, is also because what we are doing is we are transferring an item, or we are changing the status by means of giving money, but the money is not value. The money is some halachic device that enables the creation of this new status. I'm doing the best I can to, it's not easy, but I do think that this is somewhat reasonable. I think that this line in the Gemara actually really proves that kesef kedushin cannot possibly be the transferring of, it can't be that kesef kedushin is value. It just doesn't make sense. Questions or comments? Yeah, Rachel?
So I appreciate you bringing this up because kiddushin has always been something that has troubled me, I guess. But what we're saying, I don't know how much we can prove from like the return policy, because the actual like acquisition, I mean, just because we're giving that scenario, like if I buy something from Nordstrom and they don't let me return it, I still bought it. So I guess my point is that you can't like prove that it wasn't a true kinyan in the kinyan Bava Metzia kind of sense. I don't know Bava Metzia. I don't know what Masechta, but like one of those.
Bava Metzia, yeah. But again, you can't prove that's a true kinyan because...
But it isn't a kinyan from a return, from the Gershon.
From the return power. What you're arguing is that maybe the kiddushin is one thing and the gerushin is something different. It's not just undoing it. Again,
it was so permanent, so that's why, I don't know.
I mean, theoretically, it's possible. I can't say that it's impossible, but I do think that when I think about returning an item to Nordstrom, so that means that I gave the money, I return it, I get my money back. That's that would be the easiest way to think about this Gemara.
Right.
That's the point I'm making. The fact is we don't think about that Gemara this way. And I think that demonstrates that the Kiddushe Kesef was not the same as buying a sweater from Nordstrom. I think that's the point that we're getting to.
Right. No, I hear that. And then the other thing, because you brought up Kiddushe Ketana, it's hard not to make them synonymous.
Yeah, so that's the hard one.
It's the same thing that's happening at the end of the day, and like it's the same chalos.
So Kiddushe Ketana is really, really hard. I'll just say, I have nothing to say about Kiddushe Ketana, but just tell a story because I like telling stories sometimes. My father directed the Beis Din of America for a few years. one of the years that my father was directing the Beis Din of America, there was a certain man who was a slime bag, Shein Kamohu, and in a divorce battle with his wife, he decided to marry off, or he said that, I was Mekadesh, my daughter, Kiddushe Katana, and he was using it as leverage in terms of giving his, or giving his wife a get. That was the story. Young woman, you can look it up in the New York Times, Sarah Leah Goldstein, her father said she married her off. So the years that my father was in the Beis Din of America, this was like his project. He got Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach to agree that that she was not married, which was like a really big deal. Because the basic argument was that anyone who would marry off his underage daughter is such a Rasha that he has no nemanos. So you can't believe him. That was the basic argument. My daughter is now in 12th grade in Manhattan High School. So they have a genealogy project. So the genealogy project is you're supposed to like interview your oldest living relative and get stuff. So my daughter spent a few hours with my father, and my father is like, oh yeah, all the Kedusha Katana stuff. He has like this whole pile of papers, and he was like so excited. This is like one of his like really exciting stories. So that's what I have to say about Kedusha Katana. Anyone who tries it is a slime bag. We'll say it like that.
Wait, was your daughter scandalized though? Had she heard of Kedusha Katana before?
So she had not heard of it. But she was really excited about, wow, this is like cool. There's an article in the New York Times about this. Wow, this is like awesome. It actually, like, this was a big deal. This was a really big deal. Whatever, you could Google around, you'll find it. I'm just sitting over here now because my father pulled out this whole file of papers to give my daughter. He gave it to her last Sunday. And one of the things is like this plate that says Beis Din, which somehow he took off the door when he left the Beis Din, and I'm supposed to give it back to them now because like he found it with his papers, with all of his Kedusha Katana papers. So I'm supposed to return this to the Beis Din at some point, but okay, I just have this sitting on the table next to me. Okay, Chevra, questions, comments, observations? We could talk about this further. I mean, the notion of how Kedushin works is an important notion. I'm just nervous about going there because, again, if people want to go there, we could go there. I'm a little bit nervous because I don't think we could come up with anything fully satisfactory. I think, especially like we pointed out, the Kedusha Katana case does seem very difficult, even though regular Kedushin is not a transaction, right? But Kedusha Katana is harder to understand. I'll say it like that. Okay, Chevra. I guess we're going to wish you a good Shabbos. And thank you for learning. Oh, did I miss someone's quote? After Sukkah, can we do Kedushin in 3 years from now? Thank you, Rachel. It should be 3 years. We should all live and continue to learn Torah, and we'll figure all of this out. Okay, have a good night.
Good Shabbos.
Good Shabbos.
Good Shabbos.